This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Said 45-year-old with Julian Ng and Joyce Goh looking into some of the day's business news. The second phase of the Klang Valley double track is underway and is expected to kick off this month. According to sources from the Starbiz, Starbiz says that it will begin with the appointment of a new consultant from the project. The source adds that the government will call for bids through an open tender, which is a good thing.
Yeah.
And the project is expected to cost between 4 and 4.5 billion ringgit, which is a substantial reduction from the previous price tag of almost 6 billion ringgit.
Yeah, so the second phase will involve 110 km of railway tracks spanning from the Kuala Lumpur station to Klang, south to Seremban, and Simpang Port Klang to Port Klang. And according to Kereta Api Tanah Melayu, the second phase of this KVDT is crucial as the current track network is unsustainable.
Yep, so the original contractor or consultant for phase one is this company called DMIA Engineering, which stands for Dayan Maju Infrastructure Asia Engineering. Some of the other projects that they have done are Central Link KLIA Expressway, Westport, also the electrified double track between Gopeng and Ipoh. Currently, they are working on the phase one of the KVDT. And following the G14, the phase two was cancelled after a review, but now is expected to be revived with a better price tag.
Yeah, so DMIA Engineering actually got that in a partnership with Lembaga Tabung Angkatan Tentera. They were awarded the second phase of the KVDT at a contract cost of 5.9 billion ringgit. So now I guess all eyes will be on this bid. Who's going to tender for it and who will get it?
Correct. At 5.9 billion, it will come up to about 53 million per kilometre. But with a new price tag of 4.5 billion, that's 40.9 million per kilometre. Very substantial reduction. Some of the potential bidders, YTL Corp, Gamuda, WCT, Sunway Construction Group, and including DMIA Engineering as well. I guess this is a good thing. We are going into a new era where we need to reduce costs so much. We need to reduce corruption so badly that the open tender, to me, I think is a very good news.
Yeah, it's a definitely good move. I mean, not just to reduce costs, but to make sure that the best person, the best company wins the contract.
Absolutely. Joyce, still on the transportation theme, everyone's minds are on the Proton X70.
Yeah.
And the competition between Proton and Proda is heating up so much that they are really putting out all the stops to boost margins and to regain market share by putting up their own version of the SUV.
So the soccer mom car. Well, bookings for the Proton X70 apparently exceeded 15,000 units since September. The vehicle was launched on December 12, and the average booking numbers climbed to 200 to 300 per day. That's quite a lot.
I know of many people, family and friends, they're very interested to get one of these units, which I think is priced at about 120,000, if I'm not mistaken. Perudo Aros SUV, they announced that the bookings were open last week, and they're confident of selling an average of 2,500 units monthly. They want to end the year at about 31,000 units in sales. And this is priced at about
over 70,000
right?
Yeah.
Proton is also going to come out with an X50, which is also a lower price than the X70.
Well, I guess it depends on what you're looking for in the car. My father-in-law sent a photo of the X70. One of his friends got the car and it looks pretty good. I'm not sure about the driving and all that. I have to go and test drive the car.
Yeah, but you know, the car market has been very pedestrian, no pun intended, right, over the last few years, where TIV volume for 2019, M Investment Bank Research is projecting only a 2% growth.
Oh, 2% only for this year. So I guess, they're looking at 600,000 units. They also note that the growth in 2019 would depend on the performance of volume-oriented players such as Produa, Honda, Toyota, Nissan, and Mazda. Kenanga, they expect the TIV growth to be flat at 590,000 units. This is due to the absence of that one-off tax holiday that we saw in 2018. So that could net off. Perhaps things could be better this year if new launches come in and people like the new launches and they can afford it, that could help with the numbers for
just
this
like,
year.
Just like the iPhone, right? You have to keep on coming up with new models. Now, still on the auto sector, The Edge reports that Cycle & Carriage Bintang could be exiting its retail operations and selling it to Mercedes-Benz Malaysia.
Yeah, so what you're saying is that this could see the Cycle Carriage & Bintang downsizing its business and only selling spare parts and servicing Mercedes-Benz vehicles in Malaysia.
Yep. So we know that from last year, there was an option that was being exercised by Daimler, right?
Last month. So last month, there was a call option by Daimler AG for Cycle Carriage & Bintang to dispose 49% of its stake in Mercedes-Benz Malaysia for 66 million ringgit. And that sale is going to take about 12 months to complete. And that results in Cycle Carriage & Bintang, they will no longer be entitled to the annual dividend from Mercedes-Benz Malaysia of 11.2 million ringgit, Julian. That's quite a lot.
That's quite a lot of money because for the 9 months September, they made about 19 million in net profit and 11.2 of that came from dividends from Daimler. So now the question is quite existential for Cycle & Carriage about what they want to do, because right now they've just been reduced to a servicing parts company.
If the news happens, because right now it's still to fruition. Yeah, that's right. So looking at this, I think their 2017 annual report, gross profit margins for Cycle & Carriage, that's been going down, that's been narrowing from 9.2% in 2015 to 6.7% in 2017.
Yep. In spite of that, if you look at the overall Mercedes performance in Malaysia, I mean, going just beyond Cycle & Carriage, the car sales are great despite the CCB slump, right?
Okay, so only CCB is seeing a drop when it comes to sales of Mercedes cars. That's
right, because Mercedes have achieved a record high sales volume of about 10,000 units for the first 9 months of 2018. And this is a 16% rise from the same period last year.
Wow.
Also, they have a 2.5% market share of the premium car segment. It's got the compact car now, A-Class, B-Class. A lot of these are very useful in luring people. It's like an entry-level Mercedes into the entry market so that you'll buy more expensive cars in the future.
I guess for people who like smaller cars as well and nippy cars, you know, where you can park easier. Some people, perhaps, who don't have drivers to park their cars for them, you know, you kind of need smaller cars. And I personally like a smaller car. It's easier to park.
So,
but of course, I cannot afford the A-Class.
It's now a face-off between the local rebadging of bigger SUVs or the smaller cars from the luxury brands like Mercedes. Mm. Now, moving on to the telco sector and M&A news within that, according to Reuters, Vietnam's largest telecommunications company, Viettel, they are in talks with Malaysian telcos to buy stakes. They're seeking to double their current 5 million subscribers in Myanmar by the end of the year.
This is interesting. So who are they talking to? I mean, they didn't reveal the names, but it is existing telco companies in Malaysia and Indonesia. And I think Viettel has big plans when it comes to the telco industry. This morning as well, there's this news article in Malaysian Reserve where they say that they spoke to telco analysts. And what these analysts are saying is that telco industry players may explore M&A exercises this year. This is because the fair value of telco stocks is ideal for M&A deals. That's what the analysts are saying.
Yeah, I think that also given the recent falls in the Malaysian stock prices, it might be a good time to just look at M&A. But just a little bit of background of Viettel. This is actually a military-run company in Vietnam, but they're big. They have 60 million subscribers in Vietnam, and they have over 30 million subscribers across 10 countries, predominantly in Asia and Africa. They also own the 1.2 billion unit of Viettel Global Investment that's trading on the unlisted public company market. I guess this has shades of Axiata, because Axiata also has a regional footprint where they don't necessarily own majority stakes, but they own meaningful stakes in regional companies. And it's very relevant if such telco companies want to spearhead into the digital and online economy. This will give themselves an entry with such big footprints.
Yeah, and if Viettel has money, if they have firepower, why not? You know, we don't know how much is their war chest, but looking at this piece of news that they're in talks with Malaysian telcos to buy a stake, could be they have money, they have deep pockets, and if they think that the valuations of these companies are good to invest in, then why not, right?
Yeah, also I think that the traditional mobile business is changing in very profound ways. It's getting a lot more competitive. Now a lot of virtual networks are springing up, and also the business model is really subject to being attacked.
Is being attacked already, as it is.
Of course,
now,
yeah. But you have things like 5G, right? So the 5Gs will continue to in some way defend the position of the telcos, because people are just so reliant on their mobile phones.
Yeah, and maybe this Vietnamese company would like to buy into a Malaysian telco for the transfer of technology. Some technology
That's
here, maybe
point.
They can bring over to Vietnam.
That's right. Mm. Okay, we'll be looking at what's happening in Bursa Malaysia coming up after the 9 a.m. news, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.